This episode is brought to you by Nyman Ranch. I'm Paul Willis, a fifth-generation farmer and co-founder of Nyman Ranch Pork Company. Learn more about us at NymanRanch.com.
This week on Meat and Three, we're diving straight, no chaser, into the delicious crossover of the food and jazz worlds.
And I think that sense of nostalgia is what makes it hard to do New Orleans food well, because people just have these memories of these dishes. Certainly people from New Orleans, like, you're never going to make, you know, a gumbo as good as their mother or grandmother made, right?
Comfort food, you got to get your hands dirty, and the jazz is musicians. It's like it all goes together very well, you know?
Check out Meat and Three, HRN's weekly food news roundup, wherever you listen to podcasts.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
My name is Souther Teague.
Souther!
Hey, buddy.
Hey, man.
It feels like it's been forever since you've been in the room with me.
It's been a couple of months, a few months, man.
You've been gallivanting.
Man, I've been everywhere, man.
You Johnny Cash now?
Yeah, I've been everywhere, man.
Nice.
Dude, I'm glad to be back. I know it's been, we've both had pretty, like, hectic, crazy fall seasons heading into the winter, and yeah, man. I missed you at the Heritage Radio Network 10-year anniversary party.
Yeah. Sad I couldn't be there, but I was already committed this year to be, you know, I was a dean for the second year in a row at Portland Cocktail Week, which I think is a pretty important thing to do each year. You know, it's a great educational opportunity, and the fact that it's free of charge to all students who get accepted kind of busts down a barrier that I had never really thought about. You know, I don't think of things enough. I'm not thoughtful. I'm not thoughtful or introspective enough. But I realized after being a dean the first year, I've taught there in the past. But after being a dean the first year, I realized that the nature of it being cost free for the students means that a bunch of barriers get broken down, barriers to entry for people who maybe wouldn't be able to afford those kind of things. So I think it's really important. And of course, I'm going to continue to do it as long as I can. But I was out there for a week teaching classes. I was the dean of bartending and hospitality, which is just one of the schools of discipline that was offered this year. They also had, you know, technology and sustainability and obviously ownership and management. And it's just a really cool fucking thing. So I hated to not be at the gala, but you held that down. So that was good.
Yeah, it was a blast. It was great. I had the Grand Army Beverage Director, Brendan Biggins, as you know. He was there with me, hold it down.
Yeah, and Greg Benson.
We had the Amore Amargo and the Grand Army bar booths next to each other. Had a great time.
Right on.
You were sorely missed. But yeah, I hear that Portland Cocktail Week was just as great as expected this year.
So. Yeah, I think it's close to 2,000 students that come through. And, you know, again, you apply and you apply to the school, the discipline. It's run like a college. You apply for the discipline that you'd like to go to the most.
Lots of drinking involved in late nights.
Crazy enough, no. I mean, you know, one of the things about Portland Cocktail Week that's unique to sort of all the other cocktail conferences is that none of the classes involve tastings. So when you're in class, you're there to sort of study and learn and listen. Plenty of parties and dinners that go on in the evenings, but the daytime is kind of like very, you know, scholastic.
You know, I've actually just over the past like year or two, I've noticed a pretty marked change. I know that I talked about this a little bit before, like about a year ago or so, like when I was at Camp Runamuck for both summer sessions. Mm-hmm. Actually, we in the studio today, we have Mariah Kunkel. She and I, we both worked for Brooklyn Gin, and we were sponsoring Cabin for the spring and fall sessions there. And it was a marked change just in one summer, where the first session was like crazy party time. And then the second session was very much more like kind of tightened up. Like all the campers were really, it wasn't really so much about the party. It was more about the education. I mean, like, you know, obviously like there's going to be a little bit of that anyway, but
it's a fine line in our field, you know, like, you know, you think of any conference, you know, I used to live in a conference town, New Orleans, right? So conferences come through in any conference, you know, the National Dentist Association would come through and those dudes would be in the daytime, certainly taking notes and being serious and all that thing. Yeah. But then they're cutting loose. Well, our business is the business of cutting loose. So even the learning opportunities are often peppered with, you know, some cutting loose.
I remember there's a few years there for during Tales of the Cocktail, there's like the National Youth Group Convention happening
at the same time.
Which is like the craziest like paradox.
Right. Yeah, they're all passing out pamphlets in the French Quarter, and we're all passing out in the French Quarter.
Exactly. So what's going on? You've got your pop-up in Union Square going on right now, right?
I do. So I'm doing the Union Square Holiday Market. It's the first year that I'm doing it, and I'm selling all manner of bitters and my books, which are now two, right? I'm Just Here for the Drinks, which is just over a year old. It's like a little holiday stocking stuffer-sized book. It's a paperback. It's called Let's Get Blitzin'. It's 60 mm-hmm. holiday-themed cocktails with lots of like winter and fall flavors, and mainly just a bunch of points and tips on, you know, how to do large format cocktails, punch bowls, etc., things like that to keep your party happening without you having to sort of step away from your party and not be involved. So a lot of bitters in my books, and it goes on until Christmas Eve. I share a booth with my buddy Dan. He's one half of Coffee Brothers Coffee, the locally roasted whole bean coffee roaster in Long Island City, Queens. So it's coffee and bitters at my booth in Union Square until Christmas Eve. So if you're in town, stop by and see me. I'll happily sign a book for you. I'll be out there freezing my toes off, so you might want to bring me a flask or something. I mean, I got a bottle of Old Overholt sitting there.
Yeah, I was going to say, you've got something there.
Yeah, of course. Keeping myself warm. Totally. But it's great fun so far. You know, it's good to be out there and see all of New York come through, and you know, over a million human beings walk through the market every year. It's the Urban Space Union Square Holiday Market in Union Square. So people are, you know, people who are commuters, people who are tourists, like we're getting everybody. It's pretty intense, and it's really fun. Like, it's an atmosphere of, like, I don't know, somewhat, it kind of has this somewhat old world feeling. You know, it's all these outdoor booths selling, you know, all manner of things. I'm on the row that's called Provisions, which is just like mostly consumables, you know. So I'm surrounded by like the guys from Spice and Teas, and they've been in the market for 24 years. The market's been around since 1972. I'm right across the hall from the Truffleist, the guy who does truffle oil and truffle hot sauce and truffle honey and truffle everything, right? Truffle salami, pretty delicious. And then right next to him is Farm to Table, which is a hot sauce company, and then right next to that is the guys who sell local honey. So it's pretty cool to be involved in this situation. So
very cool.
Listeners, if you're in town, please come by and see me and pick up some stuff for holiday gift giving.
Very cool.
Yeah, man.
You know, I love this time of year in New York, especially because, I mean, I moved to Marin County, to the Bay Area, just over a year ago. It was last September. And
entire loss.
I come back. It's I appreciate it so much more whenever I come back here, not being here all the time, because it's like, especially this time of year where it's like holiday season, and it really starts feeling like there are a lot of different New Yorks. You know what I mean? And like, this is like holiday season in New York is a really special time. I didn't really give a shit about the holidays so much for a very long time, but it's like, it just feels different this time of year when you're in New York during the holidays. It's a special thing. And especially like, well, for instance, like tomorrow is repeal day.
That's a big day. That's why you're here.
Yeah. Part of the reason I'm hosting the repeal day party on Friday at the James Beard House, along with friends of the show, Claire Sprouse from Hunky Dory. And tomorrow actually marks my 9-year anniversary with Heritage Radio Network.
Yeah, your first appearance 9 years ago, Repeal Day. Mm-hmm. Which show were you on? This was before the Speakeasy existed.
It was what ended up turning in. Like, it was the reason why I got the offer to get the show, which turned into Speakeasy, like a month later. I was on The Main Course, which is Patrick Martin's show.
Founder of the whole deal.
Founder of Heritage Radio.
And Heritage Foods, yeah.
And, so, I, you know, especially what we kind of touched on before, kind of want to touch on this for a second, too. Like, the way that, like, the industry, not just the industry, but, like, consumers, too, the way that they have, there's been, like, a kind of an interesting shift in the way that, like you said, especially with, like, Portland Cocktail Week, where it's, like, not so much of a party, it's kind of, like, there's... It almost feels like there was the initiation that was like celebratory and like kind of party vibes. But now it's like, all right, now we're getting into this like in a more like educational, academic way. So I feel like when, from 9 years ago when I did the show, it was on Repeal Day, so I had to talk about Prohibition, right? I mean, I had like all these other ideas to talk about, like different subject matters, but then I had a air of relief because I was like, oh, it's Repeal Day. I can talk about Prohibition.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's easy.
That's the big topic, that, right?
You know, but it's interesting to see how that subject has kind of morphed over the years from, rather than being like an excuse to celebrate alcohol coming back into legality, but now it's like, I feel like every year it becomes more and more in-depth and educational, which is great. That means that we've hit this certain kind of like bell curve. Like, I don't want to say bell curve in the wrong way, but like, you know, do you understand what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, of course, the cosine. It's a wave. It's a wave we're on where we've come to, you know, we've come to sort of like respect and revere more than just sort of like observe and party.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. So it's a good thing. Speaking of that, it's a good tie into what I wanted to mention as well. So Repeal Day is tomorrow, the 5th, which ended Prohibition. January 16th, 100 years ago on this January 16th, is when Repeal Day was enacted.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a very special guest going to be on the show that day, who's been on the show before, Bailey Pryor, from Real McCoy Rum, also a documentary filmmaker, really intelligent fellow, is going to sit down and talk to us about how many things in the current day are still similar to the things that were going on in Prohibition back then. And I don't want to give away any spoilers, but it's a pretty fascinating conversation. We're going to air that on the day that Prohibition was enacted 100 years ago. Pretty cool conversation.
Very cool.
And speaking of rum, we got some rum nerds in the room. returning to the show for, I think, are you maybe the most ever guest on the show, Austin Hartman?
Oh, yeah.
He's like the Steve Martin or like Alec Baldwin on like Saturday Night.
Right. You're going to get your like fancy.
You have to wear the robe.
I get a jacket at some point.
It's like a smoking jacket.
Smoking jacket, yeah.
With like a five on it.
Yeah.
But I think that's just happenstance, right? You lurk. You're hanging out at Roberta's. You're hanging out at Roberta's Pizza all the time, having lunch on Wednesdays.
Wednesday lunch, it's here, and then you pop in, and I was like, all right, I'm gonna jump in on the show.
And then you brought with you Bridget from Only's Rum, right?
Correct.
Welcome
Hi.
To the studio, both of you.
And of course,
Mariah's in the room as well. She's just hanging out. She said she wasn't gonna talk. Are you gonna break the rule?
Just a little.
Okay. happy to see you. So Damon and I were just going to kind of use this opportunity to catch up since he hasn't been in town for a while, but you guys were lurking around and having lunch, so we dragged you into the studio, and we made
Stop saying lurking, by the way.
I'm talking directly to Austin. He's a lurker. You know he's a lurker. Look at him. Look at that shifty eyes. You guys were having lunch at Roberta's and you reached out to me yesterday and just said, hey, you doing a live show tomorrow? And I said, yeah, let's do it. So here you guys are. But it is time to take a break. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back after we hear from our sponsors, and we'll hang out and chat rum, chat mezcal, chat Repeal Day, chat Prohibition, chat it all.
Everything.
Stay tuned.
My name is Paul Willis. I'm a fifth generation hog farmer, and I owned and operated the Willis Free Range Pig Farm for over 41 years. I've dedicated my life to revitalizing sustainable hog farming methods in the Midwest and moving farms away from the common industrial practices. In 1998, I established the Nyman Ranch Pork Company. I'm proud to say Nyman Ranch has since grown into a network of over 740 independent family farmers and ranchers today. At Nyman Ranch, our animals are raised with care. We believe that the quality of an animal's life impacts the quality of the meat. Our high standards were developed with the help of animal welfare expert Dr. Temple Grandin and are among the strictest in the industry. All of our animals live outdoors or in deeply bedded pens, and they're never given antibiotics or added hormones ever, and are only fed a high-quality 100% vegetarian diet. Whether they're raising hogs, cattle, or lamb, Nyman Ranch farmers and ranchers share our commitment to traditional farming, raising livestock in the way our parents and grandparents did, and supporting our rural communities. We share a common belief that humane and sustainable methods produce the best possible flavor. Learn more about our work at Nyman Ranch at NymanRanch.com.
And we are back. You're listening to the Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. We've got our friends in the studio. We've got Raya. We've got Bridget. We've got Austin. And
we've got you. You're back. Like, I'm so happy to see you in your chair.
Yeah.
So I usually sit on the, people can't see the studio, but I usually sit with my back to the booth where Jeet is, and you sit facing him, so you get the cues to come back in. But when you're not here, I have to sit in your chair.
Yeah, so I noticed.
Like the room's back.
I've seen pictures.
Yeah.
I hope you noticed because
I farted
right
on it. Are my farts lingering?
Well, it's kind of got like this meshy kind of thing, so I think it's. I don't think it lingers.
Clear.
It's. Cool. So that's our show for today.
Yeah, okay. Well, welcome back, David.
So, okay. So before the break, we were talking about, I just want to know what's going on with you guys. I mean, like, I know Mariah, like, we've been talking, like, we keep in touch pretty often about, like, what's going on with Bonez. Like, you've been really, like, working up that brand and, like, getting it out there. I see it, like, everywhere now. And knowing from our time spent together working with Brooklyn Gin, like, I know that you're just really good at making that shit happen. So, aww, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
They actually have a Bonez Mezcal drink on the menu here at Roberta's.
They do.
Oh, and, yes.
Yeah, totally. And it, they finally brought on Brooklyn Gin after I left, after 6 years of pushing them for it.
Conflict of interest. You know, you can't be in the studio and have a drink on the menu.
Yeah. You know what goes really well with, like, mezcal is rum. I've always done, I love, mm-hmm, like, there's certain, like, kind of weird mashups with certain spirits. Like, I like scotch and gin together, mm-hmm, in cocktails. It's kind of a weird combo. You wouldn't really think of it, but, like, I think rum and mezcal, rum and agave really, like, cane and agave, mm-hmm, really go well together. They're kind of, like, kind of, wouldn't you say that agave and, like, cane are kind of in, they're kind of cousins in a weird way? Like, I mean, they're both essentially grasses of sorts, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they're not. It's like, well, you know what I mean. You know what I'm saying.
They're just nodding their heads at you. They're both looking at you like.
I mean, like,
they're my
the
two
mood
favorite things. Yeah. So
they're not okay. You're not looking at like a fruit distillate versus like a grain distillate.
Sure.
You're, right. They're close enough. That's what I'm saying. They're like kind of cousins.
Roger that.
So they work really well together.
I do. It's funny that you mentioned. I don't really think about it straightforward, but I do that myself. You know, and so does my team. Like Blake had a drink on the previous menu at Amore Margo that was, we call it the cartographer because it was all over the map, right? But it had mezcal along with pot still Jamaican rum,
yeah,
and several other things. But yeah, that combination brings something forward in both things.
Yeah.
Neither party is a loser in that situation.
Just us. Yeah. We're the only losers winners in that party. We're always the losers at the party.
Both categories too, like, are so versatile in terroir that
you
can take one in one category and one from the other, and you'll find a perfect, like, harmonious balance.
Yeah,
sure. There's enough spread of you know, characteristics that you can find couplings.
Yeah,
all throughout the categories of both. It's pretty rad. So Bridget, let's talk about your rum. Let's get into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's going on with that lately?
What's up with that?
Yeah. What's up with that lately?
Yeah. So the most recent news, I was actually, when Austin and I were chatting at lunch, like, I've been thankful to be on the show a couple of times now, but we've never talked about my most recent Oni's release, which is cool. We're 7 years old, a little over 7 years old now. It started,
which is amazing.
7 years ago. Yeah.
I remember when you first started and you were on the show.
Yeah. So, I guess the most recent news is we launched a, new white rum, which is a blend of an aged rum from the Dominican Republic and our Oni's original. And that's what one of the things Austin's been helping us out with in terms of spreading the word and getting it placed here at lovely Roberta's on the menu, which is awesome. It was inspired basically by Prohibition in a lot of ways. And a lot of the tricks of rum runners were to import exclusive, high-quality aged reserves, typically from Cuba. Like any good drug dealers, cut it with stuff they made in their basement or wherever else.
Drug dealers.
Yeah. And, you know,
good business person, bad.
Yeah. Double their reserves. So I thought it would be a really cool way to pay homage to the Caribbean, which is obviously the most influential place of rum, combining it with American rum history, adding an age dimension to a product. So, and also paying a little bit of homage to my love for fresh pressed juice rums. So we've imported a 2-year-old fresh pressed juice rum from the DR. It's aged in old bourbon barrels. We blend it with still proof Oni's original, and then we cut that all down at the distillery. And yeah, we launched that last year, so that's been our most recent focus. I think it's a great balance. Yeah.
Do you see like rum getting out there into different territory than it has before? Because I've seen recently some really fucking crazy shit going on with like rum influence in other parts of the business. Like for instance, like I gotta get a quick shout out to my buddy Isaac Shumway. He just opened up a bar called California Gold in my town in San Rafael, California, in Marin, and he's been around the San Francisco cocktail bar scene for a while. He just opened the spot, and they have this Boilermaker that is like completely driven towards. I just feel like it's just driven. They just put this Boilermaker on for the industry. It's a shot of Fernet, duh.
Yeah.
But then this beer, and it's a fucking banana daiquiri sour beer.
Whoa. So I'm gonna try that.
That's what I'm saying. Like, but I've been seeing a lot of like rum influence. Like, is it Innocent Gun? Is that the beer that like they Scott, do like
they age the, it in Scotch barrels?
Or yeah,
they,
right.
They've done like I think they did a Caribbean rum barrel aged one too.
Right.
Unless I'm thinking of it. But like it started like kind of like that they've been doing that for like I don't know, almost a decade now, I think. Yeah. But like it's starting to like you're starting to at least I'm starting to see like rum kind of like finding its way into other like
yeah,
corners.
Sure. I mean I have the Mancino vermouth, which is cask aged in Dunkew barrels, mm-hmm. right? Rum's finding its way into all sorts of categories.
Even Scotch and whiskey. There's like finishes and
like
and
the rum barrel, yeah, like the barrel program. Whiskey. Yeah, the barrel whiskey. They have that the Tale of Two Casks or whatever it's called.
Mm-hmm.
And like yeah, so yeah. It's like it's really
yeah. I'll say from someone cool. that's been hustling this rum, you know, on the street, you know, hitting the streets for 7 years now. The first, I would say, maybe 2 to 4 years, I don't know, time is escaping me. Every knocking on doors, buyers would be like, oh, but like, when's the whiskey coming? And I'm like, no, my like vision is to bring rum distilling back to New York and make really awesome, cool rums. And they'd be like, let us know when the whiskey's coming. Positive note is the past 3 to 4 years, the opposite's been happening. Like, oh, rum? Awesome.
Yeah.
Like, tell me about it. I want to learn more. And like a real keen interest from the trade. And that's, you know, our gateway to the consumer, much more menu placement and acknowledgement. And that's, you know, the consumer's trusting you guys to tell them what's good. And you're telling them rum's good. And so hopefully they continue to get more educated. They're ordering it more. And, you know, yeah. So it goes, hopefully.
I mean, like, I know that, like, Whiskey Fest was yesterday here in New York City. Why don't we have, like...
Well, we do.
Why isn't it at the level of Whiskey Fest?
Well, you know, it's got to grow, I suppose.
It's getting there.
It is getting there. And are there other rum producers here in New York? Are you the only one?
As far as I know, I'm the only one.
Yeah, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Because there's so much distilling going on in this
in New York City or New York State?
Yeah.
Both.
I know that Tuttletown did one that was like, it was called like the Roggins rum.
Yes. I do remember that.
I have a bottle of that somewhere.
Like, I don't.
But that was just like a
still
one-off.
Produce it.
Yeah, I think it was a one-off.
And I know that Van Brunt did Due North.
Due North.
I don't know if they still do. I don't know. I see their whiskey a lot.
I haven't seen the Due North in a minute.
Yeah.
And then also, is Brookshire in New York?
I don't know.
Isn't the...
You're the rum nerd.
I'm horrible at locations, though. Anything north of... the Bronx.
There are like 100 like, distillery or
anything
over
north of 14th Street.
It's like everything is upstate at that point.
Yeah, it's upstate. Canada is upstate.
Upstate Massachusetts.
Well, you know, like Patoro in the Bronx, I think.
Yeah.
It's not, I don't know. You know more about.
Well, either way, what we're saying here, I think overall, is that it's hard for us to sit here and come up with them. There aren't many, and they aren't representing. So you're representing New York distilling and making rum.
Yes.
Which is a powerfully unique thing and good position to be in. You've been doing it for 7 years now.
Yeah, just 7 years later, and you came from finance, right?
Yeah.
So like,
crunching numbers.
Once you like look back on the last 7 years, I mean, like,
you knew.
Are you still happy with what your decision was?
Yes. It's, I do think about it like quite often because like I didn't grow up saying like, I'm going to be a rum distiller, you know, and it just sort of organically happened. It felt like I, you know, this was what I was meant to do.
You know what's interesting about that though? Is that I think we're at a time now, especially what we were talking about before, like with education, like the kind of like curve of the presence of the information, the education that's out there now. It's like, I'm not saying that like there's going to be a bunch of kids out there being like, I'm going to be a distiller one day.
Yeah.
Like but it's not that far off. I mean, when you think about like all the cooking shows and like drink shows and like education out there, it's like we're starting to see a lot more like professional, like career bartenders coming up at way younger ages.
Yeah.
You know, that like know their shit before they're even legally allowed to drink alcohol.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. There's a greater amount. There's a greater amount of interest has been generated over. Through all those things, through all the educational programs we have, and
Chaim Dowerman shows was like one this, of them,
frankly.
Right?
Yeah.
He was mixing stuff in his dorm room.
Yeah.
I think Aaron Polsky, too.
Yeah, he was way underage.
I guess I'm just like naming all the people who used to work for you at Amore Amargo.
And more focus is like it being a craft from like distilling to hospitality. It's more treated as like this is a profession versus this is just a job you have while you're making your movie in college.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
Yeah. It is amazing. Were you making movies in college?
I was, yeah.
You were doing fan fiction.
And then, and then I dropped out of college for bartending, so it worked out.
Yeah. Nice.
Here we are.
Wait, okay, so what were your films that you were making? I mean, because you're like really into in comic books and like sci-fi. And like
yeah, nerdy like, comic book, nerdy comic. Early movies, yeah.
Yeah, so were you doing like...
short films about... superheroes and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah. Can we see them?
Yeah. Yeah, we'll get some.
They're on the internet.
We'll get some links.
They're on the internet.
We'll get link some in bio. Yeah.
And so now you've started something new as well. Well, there's a couple of new things that you mentioned to me that you started. Rum boy, rum girl? Or is it rum girl, rum boy? Which is the way it goes?
Rum boy, rum girl. Yeah. It's a play
the
on.
Boy, the boy gets top billing.
The damned jet boy, jet girl.
Okay, all right. I'll take it.
Yeah, it's my girlfriend Jane and I. We do a lot of rum. Jane Danger. We do a lot of rum stuff together, and so kind of just cataloging our pop-ups, co-collaborations on cocktails and fun travels throughout the Caribbean and things.
That's pretty rad.
Yeah.
How's that going?
It's good. Last night we actually did a, speaking of nerdy stuff, we did a Star Trek Tiki pop-up at Featherweight.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. For that. How was that?
It was a lot of fun. We got to wear Starfleet uniforms and Star Trek t-shirts. And
did anyone wear their lucky red away team shirt?
Jane did, yeah.
Yeah.
And she survived the mission. There was a lot of cool puns and nerdy references. And it was like kind of building up to that. It's like, you know, we get to collaborate on things because we have our different various works. So finding time to work together on things is... been really cool.
Yeah, that is pretty rad.
Yeah.
And
what's the coolest place you've been to so far, like on these excursions to check out like different rum locale? Mm-hmm. I mean, I know that's a loaded question. They're all like unique and special.
Brooklyn,
there you go.
Brooklyn, Oni's Rum.
I think we got a show. Yeah. The Dak Shack.
Yeah, the Dak Shack.
Get the Dak Shack at Oni's Rum.
Yeah, no, I mean, travel, every island has their own unique, beautiful pockets to it, so I mean, and all the rum is super delicious. Yeah. We recently just got back from Puerto Rico, did a little pop up at Bar Penultima in Centerset.
Oh yeah, fucking love those guys.
Yeah, Steven is a good bud.
The Hopis.
Yeah, the Hopis are the best.
Yeah,
and then Steven, Jane, and I popped over to VAK's, hung out with our buds at Duffy's, and there's actually a new distillery about to open soon on VAK's, which was really exciting to check out.
Which is just a little tiny neighboring island that's still part of Puerto Rico, right?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't get to go there when I went to Puerto Rico, but they were like, we got to go next time. So I'm
VAK's Culebra, tiny, beautiful, tiny little islands are doing really well right now, Post Maria.
And you have a little bit of a plan for that place, right? You want to talk about that? No? So you don't have any plans for that.
I just love that place.
Gee, edit that out.
I just love that place.
Gotcha. It's live. You can't edit that out.
The more time you can spend down there, the more projects you can do to cultivate, like there's still work to be done Post Maria. And it's the more you can do, the better.
Of course.
I mean, the biggest thing is like promoting tourism, bringing people back down to the island, finances and surpluses is the best.
Yeah, yeah. That's one of the reasons that I went down. I wanted to like go and give back and, you know, get in the mix and spend some money. You know, like that's what they need after all that stuff. And it's, you know, I feel like it's out of the news, so people don't think about it as much. But recovery from such a massive incident is a slow process. You know, I lived for years in New Orleans and grew up on the North Gulf Coast of Florida. Like I'm well acquainted with the slow recovery from hurricanes.
Like, so, yeah. It gets washed over so quickly. I mean, like, well, literally and figuratively.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Just the media.
Sure, sure.
I mean, that's except just for us. We're awesome as far as media goes. But
it's the nature. You know. It's the nature of human beings. You know, like once the initial trauma and excitement has died down.
Bad thing happens tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly.
You know.
Yeah.
Our attention gets pulled away.
There's also that stigma, too, of like people think like, oh, they're post this hurricane, it's just totally destroyed down there. I don't want to go down there.
Yeah, yeah, that's totally wrong. When I went, I honestly saw no signs of it, zero. And we hopped all over the island. We went from the north side to the south side of the island. We were in the mountains. We were on the beaches. We went everywhere. I didn't see a single sign of anything terrible. I just wanted to be there and spend some money. So
exactly.
We hopped all over the island and crushed as much money as we could.
Drink a bunch of Medallas and a lot of Don Q.
Medalla, that little tiny beer.
Yeah.
Right? You know, you don't feel like you had a bunch of them if they're tiny.
You're like, I had 50 beers last night.
Yeah.
Right? Doesn't seem like anything. pretty exceptional place. And it was my first visit, by the way. It was January of last year, so it was just almost a year ago. But I had such a great time, and I hung out with the Hopis at their bar, La Penultima. They were inspirational. And during the hurricane, they were one of the few places that remained having power. So they were like a community station for people to come and charge their phones and catch up on the news and all the things. So
yeah, they were also at one of the first places to have internet.
Right.
So people would just congregate.
News, yeah.
And all the restaurants in the nearby surrounding area that like their kitchens were going down, like all the refrigeration was done, they would bring their food to Penultima. They would cook it up and just give it away for free.
Yeah, they had a bunch of grills out back. They're just banging it out. Awesome stuff. Puerto Rico. Let's all go.
Let's all go. Yeah, go to Puerto Rico.
I mean, I'm going down for it's Tales on Tour again next year.
Oh, yeah.
In March?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. So I'll be going down for that. So let's all go together.
Let's all go. I think I'm going to go in January again as well.
And talk to me a little bit about, you mentioned just briefly to me, I don't know anything about it. What's Doom Tiki?
Oh, Doom Tiki. Actually, Mariah can jump in on this one too.
Yeah.
Doom Tiki is kind of a new project that Chalky Tom, who is an amazing person.
Yep.
One I feel of like best friends.
Yeah. I think everyone in the world has met and knows Chalky.
Yeah.
Like she's like one of the most internationally known people I think I've ever met. She kind of came up with this idea of Doom Tiki, and I was like, yeah, let's do it. It's kind of a way of getting kind of away from the cultural appropriation side of Tiki, but still celebrating what the fun of Tiki is.
I love it.
And she loves Doom music and Doom metal, so we kind of ran with it. We do it once a month at Paradise Lounge, the second Tuesday of every month, and it's a different guest bartender and a different charity.
Yeah.
Bonhez is a huge staple sponsor for it, as is Oni's.
Yeah.
It's kind of a fun way of doing Tiki new.
Yeah. It's tropical. They're tropical drinks.
Tropical drinks, yeah. But doomy. And charitable.
Doomy.
Bright and dark at the same time. Doomy. I know there's been a lot of conversations lately going around about, like, you know, like you said, cultural appropriation of, like, tiki drinks and Polynesian culture and all this stuff. And so, like, yeah, I think it's really, like, I think it's a really progressive way of, like, still enjoying all the flavors and, like, the beautiful design of these drinks without, you know, stepping on any like cultural toes.
Yeah.
You know,
like, and Chalky's done an amazing job of kind of curating this, this concept and bringing like community in. I mean, from aside from the charitable aspect, which changes every month, bringing in different guest bartenders to express kind of their tropical drinks in a doomy sense outside of maybe where they would normally be working. She has DJs build playlists from around the world that she knows to kind of curate the night. It's just an awesome celebration. Like our kind of like our most known mug that we sell is like one of the cat paw mugs that we do corpse paint on. And you can buy those. Oh, and
they're so cool.
Yeah. So it's like a cat tiki mug that you have corpse paint on. And
that's like skeletons and skulls and stuff like that.
Sure.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty rad.
Which is actually like the skull mugs have always been like kind of like a pretty important part of like old tiki drinks like design anyway, right? And so it's like kind of playing towards that kind of crazy side. Like there's that bar. I talk about this bar like all the damn time, but it's called Kindred. It's in San Diego.
Yeah, I love metal. That bar. I've been there with you.
Metal awesome. Vegan bar.
It's a metal vegan bar, and like they're
nothing's
like,
more metal than vegan.
They're like tiki mug. I'm air quoting tiki mugs are like just like crazy like three-eyed wolves and shit like that. It's like it, but they're beautiful,
right?
Yeah. You know, and like the whole place is gorgeous.
It's like it's an airy light, like white. And
it's all pink and gold,
and there's like toile. But if you look at
there's cats
like,
everywhere.
Yeah, it's
like
it's
demons
cool.
fucking each other.
Yeah,
hidden in Damask wallpaper designs. It's like it's the cool. Have you ever been there?
Yeah, I've been there.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, when I went out last time, I went out to visit Castro at Polite Provisions. We went over.
It's the fucking coolest. But I like that. Like. Kind of making it new and different, you know, and not necessarily.
I kind of feel like in a certain way, that's what tiki is, right? It's kind of always evolving and changing and becoming new on itself, right?
Yeah.
And the baseline is tiki is fun. I mean, we've talked about this before.
Tiki is supportive, yeah.
It's fun, but you can do it consciously and, you know.
Yeah, you don't want to piss anybody off just to have fun, right? I totally understand that.
Which is funny because Chalky is like a very punk rock, like she like bartended at the Warsaw, which is like
still does, I think.
Like, occasionally does, and that's like, you know, that's like an iconic place in Brooklyn to go see like all the like rad like old punk bands. They still like they still play there like when they're on tour. Like you can go see like even like the Sonic. I saw the Sonics play there.
The Spits are playing next week.
Yeah,
I mean, like it's fucking crazy, man. Like so, yeah, Chalky knows her shit.
I can go after the market. Market closes at 8. We can catch the Spits. Yeah. Let's catch the Spits next week.
But you don't have to piss people off to be punk rock.
Yeah, right.
Or do you?
I think you just have to be pissed.
Yeah, maybe be pissed about the system. Yeah, something.
You gotta be pissed about something.
Yeah, you don't piss off the other people that sword. Are like with you. Like,
yeah, raise your flag and sword against something. How do I sign up? I'll come guest bartend at Doom Tiki. I'm into it.
Yeah,
yeah,
right. For sure.
January, you're in.
Okay,
if you're around,
I'm around.
Cool.
I do like in homage to like Gary Regan, I'll do like a fucking wolf claw stir Negroni.
Yeah. Just your biggest metal ring of like a wolf head or.
Yeah, totally into it.
All right.
I'm putting in the books right now.
I'm pledging right here on the live radio show.
On live radio.
I'll come and do one next year.
Absolutely.
In January, if we can.
January.
Is it once a month or?
It's we're doing it once a month right now at Paradise, the second Tuesday. But we kind of want to, we've been talking like taking it on the road.
Oh, cool.
Kind of doing like Doom Tiki pop-ups like in Chicago at Lost Lake.
Or, sure.
In San Francisco, coming to see you, Damon.
Yeah, man.
Go out to Navy Strength in Seattle and fuck with Chris Elford.
Yeah, actually, so next Tuesday is the second Tuesday, and it's our final of the year, Black Christmas Doom Tiki.
Hail Santa.
Hail Santa. And our friends from Trailer Happiness are coming over from London to guest bartend. So it's going to be like the most epic doomy doom tiki of the year.
Cool. And that's next Tuesday?
Next Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Holy shit.
Next Tuesday, 8 p.m. at Paradise Lounge.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'm going to try and make it so I can see what I've signed myself up for.
Exactly. Yeah. Be like, oh, I've made a huge mistake.
Oh, I've made plenty of mistakes in my life. But you know, I subscribe to the Hemingway rule of always do sober what you promise while drunk. And I'm not saying I'm drunk. I'm also not saying I'm not. But I'll also finish that statement. People stop there all the time. Always do sober what you promise you do drunk is what everybody remembers.
Yep.
The next line is that'll teach you to keep your damn mouth shut.
Yeah. Like I'm gonna make a sacrifice Zarak. Yeah, exactly. With, I'm going to do a goat milk washed rye.
Let's like, get in there.
It's going to be fucking metal as hell.
And I did it on the
can
full moon.
All right, absolutely. We'll do that. All right, we'll figure that one out. Sacrifice Zarak.
And yeah, I'm totally
cool.
In.
Well,
totally
we have it. I have it.
We'll deal with Overholt.
Let's plan it. You'll be there too.
We'll I have it on air and
yeah.
Cool.
We'll take some snaps and post some photos. Yeah, man, we're in.
For the listeners, we all just cut our hands and shaking our hands in blood. We made a blood pact.
Blood and spit. yeah, yeah. It sounds awesome. What charities are you sponsoring? Can you name a few? And do you have an ethos with the charities, or are you just picking one? Doesn't matter.
I mean, that's more on Chalky's department.
Okay. Because I feel like it would be I'm not throwing anything at you, but I would say like it seems like if the notion of Doom Tiki is to kind of kill the appropriation of it, then
I mean
then like, maybe the charity should be driven towards like things that maybe have been hurt by this.
Well, so like last month was November Thanksgiving. We did a charity for I don't know the exact one, but it was towards for Indigenous peoples.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, cool. I dig it.
Yeah.
Yeah. A couple of months ago, we supported the Aloha Aina Fund, which supports the protesters at Mauna Kea.
Cool.
So it's been some really great Indigenous groups that Chalky has.
Right on. Yeah, she's smart. I know she's taken care of, I'm sure.
Yeah. And it's also like a very conversation
where they're
of
chop the top of the mountain off. To
they don't want to chop the top of the mountain off. They want to put a very large telescope on
big
top of
telescope.
The
mountain. I like the idea that they want to chop off the top of the mountain.
They don't want to do
because then it makes me even more pissed off.
Nope.
Yeah.
And I just want to protest more.
Yeah. No, that telescope's about the size of a football field. So yeah. That's.
But it's also a holy mountain.
Yeah, it's also the 14th telescope they're going to put on top of that mountain. So.
Jeez.
They don't need it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got enough. If you telescope. Haven't seen it yet, we don't need to see it at all, right?
Yeah, right.
That's my theory.
Whatever you're looking for, it's not out there.
Yeah, it's not there, man.
Sorry, pale blue dot and all. I don't want to go down that philosophical road.
Well, I do.
What? So we've been just sort of bouncing up and down our impromptu panel here. What's coming next for the Mezcal?
We just had two new single expressions that hit the market in October, which we're really excited about. One that's extremely limited. We only have 25 cases of it. It's a Jabali that just came out. And then we also had a Mexicano that's going to be more of a permanent addition to the lineup. So that brings the number of expressions that we have now available to 8, which is really exciting.
8 expressions, and one of them is going to be 20, you said 25 cases?
Yeah, it's in the market right now. Yeah.
Oh,
it's,
that's here. Okay,
that's
okay.
Here.
There's
yeah.
more than that. There's
in just, the United States. But
I was about to say, that's some small production right there.
Yeah, I mean, that's the sort of the beauty of Banez. We have this well product that's available here at Roberta's, which is really great. That's sort of the Espadín Barril, the cultivated agave. But that being part of a co-op owned brand, it allows us to sort of help these smaller batches, these smaller releases come to the market. Otherwise, probably wouldn't make it.
And it's pretty amazing that certainly sustains some you know some family farms, I'm sure, right?
Yeah. So
and it encourages because what I hear, and I could be totally off base here, but what I hear a lot with Mezcal is it's a family business, but the youngsters get up and go off to you know college or what have you, and they don't want to come back. So then suddenly the businesses are kind of dying based on the non you know we talk about sustainability all the time, sort of the non sustainability of the kind of the workforce because the workforce is family and. They're like, well, I went off to the city or somewhere else to go to college, and I don't want to go back to that life.
Yeah.
Right? So if we can get those things to market, then we can prove that it is a good thing to come back to from college and those farms and those things and keep going.
Yeah, there are a variety of different business models that a lot of the different Mezcal brands are using. Banez itself is a cooperative of 38 members. About 24, 22 of those are actually distillers. The rest of them are families, entire communities that have lands that they farm. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, being able to add to the local community in this way, doing sort of a scalable, sustainable, free trade mezcal. They own the brand. There's no large corporation or multinational sort of interest that's between the market and the farmers, the cooperative that produce it. Mm. It's one of the reasons why I'm very proud to represent the brand in the American market. Really represents sort of a third path. A lot of times you hear quality versus quantity, and I feel like being able to support this cooperative sort of structure, being able to bring this product to the market, I think is a really important third way.
Yeah, absolutely. What have you? So here I'm just hedging. I'm going down the list here because I'm thinking to myself, okay, what am I going to do with this thing that I just signed up for? So we're going to use some Banez Mezcal,
yes,
and always. Some
Oni's rum. So which of the expressions should I be interested in? You mentioned your new one. What's it called? And how many do you have now?
Three.
After 7 years, you got three expressions now.
They all start with the original base. It's all the original is the original. It's basically fermented for 6 to 8 days at cold temps at 75 degrees. So we force a lot of esters to form. And then it's a low rectification distillation. So we cut it about 164 proof, capturing a lot of that flavor. And then that 164 proof becomes the like feedstock for the line.
Right.
So the original is just diluted back down to 80 using that still proof. And then we have an overproof at 130.
Right.
And now we have the most recent blend, which is 164 proof Oni's original, 140 proof cast strength rum from the DR. And then that's blended down to 80.
Got
so
it.
If I was doing some tiki stuff, the overproof is super awesome and great for tiki cocktails and only available in New York. So
ding, ding.
I would go with that.
Ding, ding. All right, I'm already planning. I'm mapping out my menu
take
as we
that,
speak.
Everyone else.
yeah. How many drinks do I have to come up with?
Four or five.
Four or five. Okay, that's easy. All right.
You got
I was
this.
Thinking it's. I think it's like 12 or something.
Oh no. We have like our kind of like Doom Tiki House standards.
Okay, got it.
And then guest bartender.
Just
contributes
on a couple, yeah. Got it. Okay, cool.
You guys should like do a zombie or something.
Well, I'm totally excited, and we'll get it on the calendar. We'll make it happen.
Yep.
And don't forget to the listener that this Tuesday is the next one, right?
Mm-hmm.
The 10th. Doom Tiki at Paradise Lounge in what's the neighborhood again?
Ridgewood,
Queens.
Yeah,
in Queens,
678 Woodward Avenue.
Cool, man. Damon, I feel like you got something to say over there.
Yeah,
I
do.
We're getting close to wrapping up the show.
I do want
to
say this. I'm so happy that we're all sitting here in the studio together. Yeah. I'm really psyched to be here. I haven't been here in like a couple months.
The energy you bring, I love it.
Well, I'm absorbing it. Stuff you left in the chair.
I left stuff in the chair, believe me.
Yeah, you always do. You always do. But yeah, I want to say thanks to our guests today. And it's great to, it's a great time of year to be able to be around friends, family. I do want to mention, and I'd like to raise a glass for one of our family members that unfortunately passed away a couple days ago.
Yeah.
Our good friend in the Pacific Northwest, Rocky Yed, passed away age 42, 42 young.
Yeah.
More like it. Great guy. Everyone knew him, knows him. I was going to take my shirt off in the studio today. In honor of,
all shirtless. No one can see us.
Yeah.
We're all shirtless right now.
We are actually all shirtless. Amazing guy, biggest heart in the world, just an incredible person and sorely missed, man. I don't even know what to say. It's it's hard to say anything about it. It's just I just want to make sure that we.
It's always a shock when someone goes so young.
Yeah.
And especially when someone is such a powerful and lively force, right? He was a very lively person.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't, quiet. Every minute of his day seemed to be striving for ebulliency and effervescence and joy that he not only wanted to have for himself, that he wanted to share with everyone around him. So
and that's exactly how we should all be treating our lives as well, yeah. Especially with each other.
So I think I would just add to that whole statement there that, everything's busy. We're all busy. But you need to make sure you're taking time to reach out to the people that you know and share that you're thinking about them and that you love them.
Indeed.
Yeah. So here's to Rocky.
Here's to Rocky.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers.
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 On that note, guys, girls, people, everyone out there, I want to wish everyone a happy, safe, lovely holiday season.
Yeah.
I want to thank our guests again today for being here. I'm just really happy to be around and all these amazing people.
So glad you made it back.
I am too, man. Sorry, I haven't been here for a while.
That's all right.
But you know what? I always think about this way. With my good friends, it's it's only been a couple months, but I always know that my actual good friends, meet back up with them. It's no time ever even passed.
Yeah.
You just pick right back up and you keep going.
Don't skip a beat.
So, that said, I guess that's going to wrap us for the speakeasy this week. Thank you again, Mariah, Bridget, Austin, Souther.
Thanks, Damon.
All of our listeners. I do want to say again, thank you for everyone who supported us over the last 10 years at Heritage Radio Network, and especially for those who came out to support us at our 10-year gala. That was a blast.
Yeah.
I always love doing those events, like when you've got like a bunch of different like chefs and drinks people around, because there's always like, you know, like especially as bartenders, like whenever you're there at these different types of events, I always have this checklist. It's like all the things you forget to bring. It's like, you got to have like, you always want to bring your own bar towels just because.
Towels.
Ice scoops. You always miss out on pour spouts. Funnels for cheater bottles. I always bring like a little bottle of something for like other people who are working, and beer for the other chefs. And then, you know, over the last couple of years, I'm always like, I'm going to bring a quote unquote bar back. That's just someone that I put on the list that can run around and grab food from all the chefs and run drinks to them. So
personal runner.
Yeah. So like it's always a good time. So that said, also like, thank you for being my co-host. Thanks for Heritage Radio Network for having us on for so long. And, you know, I do want to say that if you can, we're still like going through the holiday season. If you can and you feel up to it, go to heritageradionetwork.org. Click on the beating heart to donate to the station. We are a nonprofit, so your donations definitely help us. No, they just straight up keep us on the air.
Yep.
And we would absolutely appreciate any of that, and hell, even if you're in town, just like we've often put out there, if you want to come hang out in the studio while we tape a show, just let us know.
Yeah,
come drop by.
Yeah, every just Wednesday, like these lurkers
too. Yeah, just lurk around.
Just lurk around. All right, you got anything else?
I got nothing, buddy.
All right, well, that's it for the Speakeasy this week. Check out Heritage Radio Network for many other programs like this one. Until next week, cheers, y'all, cheers, and happy holidays.
Thanks so much.
Cheers.
Happy holidays. Love you guys.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that sound. It's gonna get you started.
The Speakeasy is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork.
Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows that you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.